I'm sure that everybody got the statement from yesterday on Jonathan Taylor.
First, there was the dismissal of Jonathan Taylor from the team over a domestic violence accusation.
He failed. We're sorry. It's time to move on.
Then, during the SEC media days, Saban linked Alabama's crushing loss to Ohio State in the national semifinals to NFL draft distractions.
Our team chemistry from the SEC championship game to the playoff game was affected.
Now, Saban's story is being told by Monty Burke, whose recent book signing in Birmingham had fans lined up with the exception of one.
Chances of Nick coming to one of these signings, I'd say 0.0.
The unauthorized biography has Saban fuming.
One of these days, when I'm finished coaching in Alabama, I'll write an authorized book. Because, you know, there's really only one expert on my life. And guess who that is? Me.
To top it off, Alabama's number three ranking in the USA Today preseason coaches poll is the lowest in 6 years. Worse, perhaps Saban's biggest and bitterest coaching rival, Urban Meyer, has his team parked where Alabama is used to being, at number one.
I don't care how frustrated the fans are, I'm more frustrated.
Paul Feinbaum, you just recently aired the Outside the Lines piece on ESPN this past Sunday with an all-access look, a really rare bit of access with Alabama head coach Nick Saban, and it was a fantastic piece. People should check it out if they haven't seen it yet. I'm curious, just first off, how did you get this kind of access? I know that you know Nick Saban, and obviously he respects you and is very familiar with what it is you do, and obviously you're at ESPN, so you have greater access perhaps to Nick Saban and his program than others, but this was a little more unique than usual when it comes to Nick Saban. So how did you get this specific access to him?
You know, Ben, it's really an interesting story because of the relationship I have with him in Alabama and in my past. It's probably the last story I would have ever gone looking for, just because it's just something in my nature that, you know, I try to keep, you know, the past relationship with Alabama, I'm one side of the ledger. But after the Jonathan Taylor case blew up in late March, I received a call from Steve Etchioni, who's one of the producers. He produces the daily Outside the Lines, and I've gotten to know him well. He put me on years ago, and probably was the biggest break I had in relation to ESPN. And he said, "What do you think about doing something with Saban?" And I said, "I don't know. I'm not sure how interested he would be at this point to sit down. I mean, obviously, he's been profiled many times in the past, although not lately." So I thought about it. I talked first to some people at OTL, just, you know, what do you want and what are we looking for here? I didn't want to just call Alabama and start this ball rolling until I had a really good idea. Once I did, they felt like Taylor should be part of it, but not the centerpiece of it. So I then talked to Jeff Purinton and laid out what we thought. This was now mid-April, and he went to Coach Saban and said, yes, we'd probably go along with it. And then I saw Saban not too long afterwards, and you know, typical Nick Saban said, "Now, what's all this about? Like, this is it's the first he heard of it." And I just did the basic 101. I said, "Well, there's a program called Outside the Lines. It airs." He said, "Yeah, I've seen it," which meant, okay. And I said to him, I said, "Listen, Jonathan Taylor is a big issue. We'll talk about other things, the loss to Urban Meyer, et cetera." And he said, "Fine." So we agreed for me to come down there in early June, the week of his kids' camp, and we sat down for quite a while inside the complex, and then he let us roam around all afternoon at the camp, which was really fascinating, just to see him uninhibited coaching young people. And, he told us during the camp that that's really how he had been introduced to Landon Collins a couple of years ago, and it's not specifically done for recruiting, but it is certainly something that he feels like he should give back. And I commented, I said, "You could be out playing golf today. You could be at the lake." He said, "No, I want to be here." So we went from there, and we got a couple of other ideas through that conversation. One was to talk to Mushin Muhammad, who just happened to be in Charlotte, the player that was profiled. And another thing we brought up, I brought up this to Purinton, that, you know, at some point we would like to spend some extended time with him. And you know, the lake had been done, and frankly, I'd been told that Miss Terry was not thrilled about letting any more photographers and reporters in at the lake. And I thought that was, that was done in Game Changer. That's been done before. So we wanted to find something where there was really a lot of time, and there was only one way, and that's him flying someplace. And I knew he was slated to go to Connecticut, so we broached that subject, more negotiations. And he agreed to do it, and he agreed there were no guarantees that he would talk to me. I assumed he would, but, he just said, yeah, just come along, and probably going to be pretty boring. But I said, okay. So I got back from SEC Media Days Friday after spending 5 days in Birmingham, and Sunday night I was back in Tuscaloosa about midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning, and meeting the photographers at the airport at about 4:45. And I never said much. We sat next to each across from each other on the plane. It happened to be a G4, which was, as you probably know, is a little bit larger than the normal Alabama plane. It's a huge plane. It was the Drummond Company plane. They used to fly to Columbia. That's not Columbia, Missouri, by the way. And we flew to Bristol, Connecticut. And I kind of made a gut call not to try to interview him on the way up. We only had one photographer. We're in Tuscaloosa. We had, a room full of them. It was, a little bit about photography. It was shot with three cameras, which is pretty amazing. And that's 60 minutes-esque. So I knew what was going to happen. This was, again, 6 days after the NFL comment at Media Days, and I had a pretty good idea where he would go. So I followed him around, and he was hit pretty hard. And I said something to Jeff, and he said, I think he'll be, pretty open to talking at some point on the way back. So he started looking at more, he started watching film on the way up and on the way back. And you could tell after about, it's about a 2 hour, 10 minute flight, after about 45 minutes to an hour, he was looking pretty bored with the Auburn spring game. And I just kind of nodded, and we decided to sit down and talk. And we went on for, 45 minutes to an hour. And I'd never seen him this relaxed. I mean, he was relaxed in his office. It was about a week after Kristen's wedding. But on the way back, I mean, he had just literally let his hair down. And there's only so much you can use in a piece. But, I mean, it was riveting to speak with him and just to watch him and listen to him. I mean, he was having fun, and I've never seen Nick Saban have fun during an interview before.
Well, he obviously has an interesting relationship with the media, and you see two sides of it, whether he's ranting at the weekly press conferences to local media or he's granting these bigger outlets like ESPN and CBS all access passes to the program and his daily routine. He seems to like and respect you a good bit. And as someone who has been outspoken and even pretty critical recently, like you said, about the Jonathan Taylor thing, among other things, about his career, how do you think that you've remained in his favor the way you have?
Yeah, I don't know, because even though I have I've never made any bones about being a big fan of his in terms of just what he's done. And I think most people would be a fan of his if they were a fan of Nick Saban, if they were objective. I was extremely critical of him. And it was interesting. I don't know if you remember, the Taylor press conference was, I believe, on a Wednesday night. And ESPN had made the decision to go with it for a couple of minutes, get a quick reaction from me. I'm talking a 20 to 30 second reaction. And what happened was it was such a stunning press conference. They came to me and I was on several minutes and it was the most critical I've ever been of him. I just simply said, I thought it was the lowest moment of his career at Alabama. I thought he handled it all wrong. I understood what he was trying to say, but he did not communicate particularly well for someone who's a great communicator. And what was interesting is that came up during the interview. Probably the most poignant moment of the conversation was, I think it was the last part of the piece when I said on Taylor, that was, some have said that was the lowest, and he knew I had said it, but I just wanted to characterize, because others said it as well, and he got very emotional. We didn't show the whole thing. It's interesting. There's a second part of the Saban interview that will be shown, I think, in a couple of weeks on a piece on domestic players with domestic violence. We did not want just to overdo it, and since that piece was already in the making, and they'd asked me to talk to him about that. He's probably much more volatile in that than he was in the actual OTL piece on him. And he went off, and I kind of looked over out of my peripheral vision at our producers, and they were like shaking their head and thought that we're not going to last. We haven't been to the camp yet. We're not going to make it to the camp. We're going to get thrown out of his office. But I didn't care because I really felt like we needed to get into that. And that's, again, you asked the question about the relationship. He knows, I think, that I have great respect for him, but it is a little bit easier at ESPN to look more broadly at Alabama than it was sitting in Birmingham. And that's all I try to do. I'm not trying to sound like your visiting professor in every communication class in America, but I simply try to be fair. Do I like him a lot? Yes. Do we have a good relationship? Yes. I mean, did I cringe a little bit when he said in the piece that did not air Sunday but aired on SportsCenter all week long about Twitter when he said, I love you, Paul. I'm like going, okay, well, I'm sure that's going to be a headline on Twitter. I think he knows what I do, and he knows what I'm employed to do and communicate. And I just think he can deal with it fairly well.
Well, after that Jonathan Taylor press conference where you said that about him and other people did, like you mentioned, and having some time pass and having talked to him specifically about it some time later on the OTL piece, have you changed your opinion about his stance on how the whole Jonathan Taylor thing went down, or do you still consider it the lowest point of his tenure at Alabama?
I still think he was wrong. If you wanted to look at what is the low point, it's hard to find one because there have been so few. And I'm not talking about a bad loss. I'm talking about more something that he did or said. I mean, I thought his press conference after the La Monroe game in 2007 was certainly a bad moment. I thought this was another one. I probably wouldn't change my mind on that. I thought at that moment in time, which is when I said it, he came off very badly. And frankly, even in spending a lot of time with him, I mean, he didn't change my mind. Talking to Mushin Muhammad, I got a little different perspective on him giving a second chance to someone who made a terrible mistake. But I still think he erred in taking Jonathan Taylor. I just don't think he needed to do that.
Well, what sense do you get about Nick Saban's personal and professional happiness at Alabama right now?
Completely different than any time that I've spoken to him in the past. I believe, and I probably overdo this sometimes in a point of reference, but I'll never forget standing with him in the game day compound in Pasadena right before the Auburn-Florida State game. And he had just lost to Oklahoma, which followed the kick six game, and we went off to a corner. And he was at low ebb there. He was clearly distraught emotionally. I wasn't sure he was going to coach again. Let me say this in full disclosure. I mean, we have similar representation on the television side. I mean, he's represented by Jimmy Sexton, as you probably know. But when he does television for ESPN, the person who represents me also represents him. Not that that individual brought this up to me, but you start picking things up hanging around, and I just watched the comings and goings and thought that Saban was considering ending it all and maybe considering or entertaining an offer to go to game day. And maybe for a split second that happened, but he hired Lane Kiffin the next week and he was off and running. And so that was the low point where I thought he was close to leaving. And spending time with him this summer, it's completely different. He doesn't look like he's close to the end at all. He looks energized. He looks happier. He spent an enormous amount of time both in Tuscaloosa and on the plane talking about his family. And I've never really heard him do that before. I don't mean to say that he doesn't care about them or love them, but, I mean, he talked constantly about his two children living in Birmingham and spending time visiting and asked me where I'd lived and the area around there. And his mother is now living in Birmingham. And he said they go up there a lot. And it was a different Nick Saban. Maybe it's age. Maybe it's having a grandchild. Maybe it's seeing both your children married. Maybe it's knowing that you're one of the most successful coaches in college football history, whether you ever win another game. So, but this was different. I mean, you're talking about January 14 to the summer of 2015, and I didn't even recognize him.
Well, and finally, Paul, you mentioned fan frustration during the interview about recent big losses, and he said that he's even more frustrated about Alabama falling short of national championships. Do you sense that Nick Saban will right the ship and win championships at Alabama again, or do you see it trending the other way right now?
It's a titanic moment in history, I think, and there's the Shakespearean tragedy working against him that his career arc toward championships will end on that field at Jordan-Hare Stadium with Chris Davis crossing the goal line versus him holding up the crystal or whatever they give out now for the college football playoff again. I don't bet, but if someone said you must put down a bet on whether Nick Saban ever wins a national championship, I would lean toward him winning another one and maybe two. I just think he's that good. He's that committed. He's that passionate. And in spite of the love affair with Urban Meyer, I've seen this movie before. Urban is a phenomenal coach, but something usually happens. And I'll take Nick Saban over Urban Meyer in terms of the battle for number one. It may not be this year. It may be. I don't know. No one can easily predict college football, but I will be shocked if Nick Saban doesn't win at least one more national championship at Alabama and possibly more.
So I guess the next OTL piece is going to be on Carson, the 13-year-old Georgia.
Yeah, we already have the crew down there, and we're following him to seventh grade today.
Paul Feinbaum, thank you so much, and great job on the piece.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you.
Hey, I mean, I realize you can't be perfect, but do you ever say to yourself, what do I have to do? I mean, I've won four national championships. I've lost six games and 4 years. We won the SEC last year, and it's like Nick Saban in turmoil.
I don't feel that way.
Yeah.
And everyone's entitled to their opinion, and I certainly can't please everyone.